The best coaches in the game, we really ain't playing. We regroup up in the Slack chat where the coaches debrief. We be piecing these puzzles, occupy the chunk of the pie. Ain't no lie when we hit the block, helmets casted as top. You be seeing helmet after helmet, helmet after helmet. First place, second place, fifth place, eighth place, 12th place, 15, 16, 20. So many helmets, you got blurred vision, we got too many. Dick your tech, oh man, shit. They got us fucked up. Army, regroup. We pledge always to have that edge. We don't fire warning shots. Competition just dropped. We locked and loaded before lock. Whatever the time, yeah. Do you even correlate?
Being the best requires a willingness to outwork your competition. There's always someone smarter, faster, sharper, more naturally gifted.
All right, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to the DFS Army Killshot FTP, Fuck the Public, MMA Fantasy Breakdown Podcast. We are looking at UFC on ESPN 12 / UFC Vegas 4 / UFC Poirier versus Hooker, whatever you like to call it. I don't give a fuck. My name is Kevin Allen, a.k.a. The Geek. I've got the two MMA goats with me here. We got the betting maven himself, Big Marley. What's up, my man?
Not much. Trying to get excited about a 10-fight card. It helps that we got Poirier Hooker as the main event, though. It's hard not to be excited about that one, but the rest of the card, meh.
All I care about is 150K to first on DraftKings, motherfuckers. That's what I'm going after. Liking that sleeveless, attire, 17-inch guns. Going strong over there, Big Marley. Good stuff.
Thanks, man.
We've got the kill shot master himself, a man who can hit a target from 2,000 yards out, as long as you give him the wind direction and speed. That's the DFS sniper himself, the kill shot master. What's up, Snipe?
It feels good to get back on the horse with a kill shot hit last week after a rare miss the week before, but so it was good. I had a good week last week. I can't complain with the ROI. Didn't take anything down, but this card, it's weird. There's a few fights on this card I'm really looking forward to, like before we trash it too much. The main event obviously is must watch. I'm interested in Mickey Gall, Mike Perry. I want to see, and I'm a big Sean Woodson fan. I mean, not just because his nickname is the Sniper, but I think he's a legit prospect at 145. Sucks we got a replacement opponent. We'll talk about that, but those are kind of the highlights. It's worth watching. We get fights. We get some stuff on DraftKings. It's going to be weird because 10 fights, and there are a couple that on a typical week I would just stay away from, but we really don't have that option this week. So looking forward to breaking this down and staying hot.
Got to pick 6 winners. Ideally,
maybe,
probably
this week,
probably 6 winners. At least 5 of them need to be the biggest scoring players on the card. So, you know, that's what we're going to try to figure out. Can't always know who's going to win a fight. And we'll talk about that. That's very, very important and something that people miss. There are certain fights you just don't fucking know. There's no way of knowing who's going to win. But what we're trying to at least predict is what are the odds of somebody winning and what are the odds of that fight scoring well enough and how does that relate to their salary. That's how we break down fantasy.
Yeah, that last part I want to hit on just one more time, especially in this card. As we're going through, you're going to see there's a lack of underdogs for sure. So for me, when you're building GPPs, just keep in mind, if this dog wins, how much are they going to score? And the few that are way up there on that list, mix in those in your GPP lineups. That's my base strategy this week. If one of these dog wins, even if I'm not picking them, if they win, how big are they going to score?
Might only need 1 or 2.
Yep.
Might not get 1 or 2. We're going to have to see what happens. But again, 150K on the line on DraftKings. Another interesting point here is just the salaries are just really different between the two sites. And so I'm going to cover just a little bit of that as we talk about it. But you'll see, like, you know, Gian Vellante, for example, is the cheapest guy on FanDuel, which I find strange. He's certainly live to get a knockout. And why is he the cheapest? You got Jin Yu Frey. I mean, these are interesting pay down options. Even Kyle Daukaus on draft, and they're not as cheap on FanDuel as my on DraftKings. My point, You'll see here Vellante is, you know, 7,600. He's one of the higher priced dogs. Interesting contrast. So let's get right into it. UFC on ESPN 12. Man, I was hoping we'd get Sun Tzu on here for this first fight of the night, guys, because he is the Invicta specialist. And this is what this first fight is. We've got two girls that have no business being in the UFC, but they're here because apparently if they didn't have this fight on the card, it'd only be nine. And that'd be really bad. So Kay Hansen taking on Jin Yu Frey. And looks like, Kyle, it's just me and you for a moment. So what I'll do is send it over to you. Tell me about these two women fighters. I'm going to bring up their Tapologies in the meantime here. But tell me about Kay Hansen. What's her deal? What's she good at? What's her weakness? And then let's talk about Frey.
Yeah, Kay is just basically a grappler only. She'll throw some strikes, but it's mostly just to get into grappling range. But she wants to take her opponent down. She's just not great when she gets it there. But I do think she can go out there and get multiple takedowns in this fight, which I do like. Maybe a couple advances. I don't know that she can get a submission, but it's always in play, I guess. And then Jin Yu Frey is going to want to be the striker. It's this pure striker versus grappler in my eyes. I don't think Hansen has much of a shot if this was just a striking fight. And I think Frey's going to have a lot of time where she's spinning either on her back or stuffing takedowns in this fight. So that makes me really not like Frey too much. She could go out there and get a win, but she's a 105-pounder. So I don't see her having, you know, KO power. Maybe she could just end up stuffing takedowns and overwhelm Hansen, something like that on the feet, and rack up enough strikes to score okay. But I still think she's going to spend too much time, you know, stuffing takedowns or being taken down where she won't be scoring any points. So I think Faye's mostly going to be a fade for me, where I am a little bit interested in Hansen just because she is the one looking to take this fight to the ground. Maybe she can get multiple takedowns in every round. I like that about her. She's only 8,500. I like that salary as well. But I just don't see her really having 100-plus point upside either. So not a core play by any means, but definitely going to be making my player pool, whereas Frey may be somebody I X out.
Man, I'm not Xing out anybody on a 10-fight card. That is just not something I want to do. But, yeah, I mean, I don't have too much to add here because I think this is going to come down to can Frey stop takedowns. I'm looking at her record, and one thing I think that's positive, she's got wins via submission, which, I mean, against garbage. But also, her losses have not been by submission. So, you know, if Kay Hansen is really a submission grappler or wrestler submission grappler type, well, at the very least, it looks like this Jin Yu Frey hasn't lost by submission. I think they're both about the same height, but it's definitely interesting that, you know, Frey is 35 years old, just much older. I don't know if she even has that much more experience. She's just much older. If you look, she's been fighting since 2009, so she's definitely, you know, been here for a while, although she doesn't fight very much, very often. So, interesting one. I do think that this one isn't set to score very well, regardless of who wins. But again, FICO's decision minus 280. Let's see if we have any sort of a reasonable prop here inside the distance. Hansen inside the distance plus 305. Frey is plus 670. So, you know, doesn't look great. Doesn't look great for these two. So, I'm going with Hansen as well. I always favor the wrestlers, but this is one of those fights where I'm going to just take a little bit of each. It doesn't project well. It should be a shitty scoring fight, but you just can't ignore any fight on a 10 fight card. So it's not something I want to load up on, but I'll have some exposure here. All right, next up, another fight that's really, really tough to call in my opinion and does not project in my mind. And I'll be interested in your take, Marley. We've lost Sniper. He'll be back. At worst for the kill shot. But Jordan Griffin taking on Yusuf Zalal. Now, Yusuf Zalal is coming in. He's now favored. He's priced as an underdog. He's now favored at minus 125. Fight goes to decision -145, so a little bit greater than 50% on those odds, about 55%. So it looks like Zalal a little more likely to be getting a knockout, not great odds, plus 475, with Griffin at plus 335 to get a submission. Now, Kyle, Jordan Griffin, you know, he was supposed to fight recently. I think that fight was canceled. Last time we saw Yusuf Zalal, he was, you know what I got to remember here, but he was pointing up his opponent. He was a slight underdog, and he was just pointing up this Austin Lingo, who's a boxer. He got 6 takedowns in that fight, and that looks really good for DraftKings purposes. But even with the 6 takedowns, he didn't score that well. He got like 88 points. Do you think this is a guy who we can expect another multi-takedown outing from, or do we expect a little bit more of a stand-up battle here, and what's your lean in this one?
Yeah, I definitely think he'll go out there and get some takedowns in this matchup. Jordan Griffin's not too hard to be taken down. He kind of likes it on the ground. So I expect some takedowns, some advances, a fun striking match on both sides. But, yeah, I'm more impressed with Zalal, mainly from that UFC debut. He really impressed me in that one. And it makes me think he's going to be the better striker here, the guy more likely to land takedowns. I think Griffin's probably more dangerous, maybe, you know, more power and more dangerous with submissions as well. But Griffin doesn't do anything to really score highly unless he finishes early, which I don't really love. And now the line value we have is on Zalal because he's the cheaper guy on DraftKings, but now he's the new betting favorite. So I do definitely love the value. I think that makes him cash game playable for sure. I am picking him to win as well, so an underdog I like on the card. I'm sure I'll probably be overweight to the field, but I do think he'll be pretty popular because of this line value, and I don't know what the field's going to be at, so I don't know that I'll for sure be overweight. If I project him at like 40%, I might have to go a little bit lower than that because I could definitely see him getting an 80-point win here, just a 10X. I don't know that that'll do it, and if I knew that was going to be the case at 40%, I feel like underweight would be the way to go. But I would still just probably more so fade the fight than get leverage on the Griffin side. Zalal's my pick here. I just think he's probably going to get it done by decision, and I don't see him having, you know, 100-plus point upside. I just think he does score 10X or more if he gets his hand raised.
10X might not do it. It might do it. It might not. Snipe, do you have a lean here? Zalal versus Griffin.
Yeah, I like Zalal quite a bit just because Griffin can be taken down. And that's what Zalal is going to want to do. We saw it in his last UFC fight. He landed 6 or 7 takedowns. Griffin only won his fight against TJ Brown because he caught his submission. One of the craziest submissions you'll see. Put a guy to sleep with a guillotine while Brown was in side control, which is just, it shouldn't happen. It was just weird.
This guy gets those kind of submissions, though. He's like always on his back and throwing up.
He's live, and it's a mid-range fight. I'm going to be on the odds value chalk. I'm probably going to, I mean, I heard Kyle talking about, you know, the ownership part of it. I'm probably going to be right on the field weight and call it a day from there and pick leverage spots in other places. But I do like this fight. I do like Zalal. And I'm going to go back to the first fight that I know I missed. Real quick, what'd you guys pick for that fight out of curiosity? Hansen?
Yeah, we all picked Hansen.
So I'm leaning Hansen too, but I think Ufrey is the better DK play because it's a close fight. 20-year-old Hansen, 35-year-old Frey. It's an Invicta fight. I don't think it's going to score great. And with the lack of dogs, I'll take some shots on Frey because if she scores her 60-70 point decision, could end up on the optimal, whereas Hansen's won't. So I'm picking Hansen in a close fight, but I'm more likely to play Frey. Yep, and I just gave my
Frey
thoughts
is super
one.
Super cheap, and you know that was that previous fight. Want to say one thing, Sun Tzu. If you want to jump in, I popped you that link in Slack, and you can jump in and talk about some of the rest of these fights with us if you like.
There goes my evening. you and Joe talking.
As we like to chat, man. Everybody wants to hear the breakdowns. They want to hear those breakdowns. The long.
No, it's great stuff. It's great stuff. I literally might go make a bag of popcorn.
Like Yusuf Zalal, my one thing with him is just his striking is very slow. And when I say slow, I mean he's slow. He's very athletic, but He's darting around a lot, poke you, and then move out. So he's not a guy who's going to land volume of strikes. And that, for me, is a primary concern. Look, we got Sean frozen again here. He's having some crazy internet issues. But
at least he's smiling still.
Yeah, that's a nice picture. Very handsome. So there
hey,
you go.
Hey, I'm back. Holy fuck.
So that's
yeah, so if that happens again, I might just give up. Jesus.
Hey, listen, you pop right back. It's all good. But so that's my main issue with Zalal, though. Like, he's going to need all those takedowns. I didn't really scout him to be this big takedowns guy. He just was getting takedowns against that Austin Lingo guy, who was just such a heavy-footed boxer. He just had no defense against being taken down. So it's kind of weird. But I don't expect him to get six takedowns in this one. I just don't. And so I'm worried about the scoring. And for Zalal, smart is just keep it standing against Griffin, because Griffin, the only way he seems to win is by throwing up a sub off his back. So probably should keep it standing, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what he does here. All right, on to the next fight. We've got Takashi Sato taking on Ramiz Brahimaj. Okay, Sato is now just a -135 favorite, with the comeback on Ramiz being +115. And Sniper, I'm going to start with you since you're here. The fight doesn't go to decision is -185. This
has my jam.
Inside the distance prop. We like this fight. Ramiz, crazy grappling maniac, just like Max Roskopf from last week. We've seen this song before.
Yep.
Not dominating, but dominating guys, getting early finishes on the regional scene. Crappy guys. This is a step up. He's taking on Takashi Sato. Takashi Sato fought Bilal Muhammad very tough. Got a takedown. Stuffed 8 of Bilal's 10 takedown attempts. A lot of takedown attempts were stuffed. Who the fuck is Ramiz going to take this guy down? Even Bilal Muhammad had a hard time taking him down. Convince me otherwise.
I don't care either way, honestly, because I think this fight's just going to score. Takashi Sato has not been in a decision since 2015, and he's fought 8 times since then. And before that, and it's 10 of 11. And if you go past that, 10 of 12, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 of his last 17 fights, his whole career. Yeah, he doesn't go to decision. These fights score for DraftKings on a 10-fight card, -185 at these prices. Man, that's all I need.
You know who else doesn't go to decision?
Ramiz.
Mostly.
Yeah. When
he loses, he loses by decision. When he wins.
I don't think he's gonna get decisioned here. I think he's I think this fight finishes. I think there's value inside the distance line. I think this is gonna be a fun fight. I think unless it's highly unlikely what happened to Roshkov's gonna get in Ramiz's head or is gonna think about it, but I mean it's worth mentioning because they are kind of similar, but look, he's going to go try and grapple, and we'll see if he can get him down. My gut is that Takashi Sato is going to catch him coming in. That's kind of where my head is at in this fight, but I'll be about even on both sides, and I'm playing a ton of this fight. Like, I'm going to pretty much split it up. Maybe I'm damn near all in, like 40-45% of both guys. I love this fight, but I have a hard time reading it because Sato isn't great, and Ramiz is brand new. So just load up on both sides. There's other fights I'm gonna hedge one way more than the other. But early for this card, I think I said last week I took stands early in the card. This week I'm taking stands later in the card. I'm gonna be a little milk toasty early, stay alive, pick the smarter fights, and then make my plays late. So this fight, play both sides.
There we go. Kyle, do you agree with Sniper that this fight looks to be a high-scoring one? And do you have a lean to where you can go 60-70% one way or the other here? And why?
Yeah, I am pretty much all in as well, I think. There's like 3 fights on this card where I think you can pretty much go all in with, and this is the first one of them. Ramiz is a really aggressive grappler, and if he can get a takedown, he can lock up a submission really fast. It could be, you know, 95 points, just one takedown, a submission that he gets. which I'm totally fine with at any underdog price. I'm absolutely okay with that. But if he wins, I feel like it's a first round submission. So I like him for that reason. But if he doesn't get the first round submission, I feel like he's going to lose and probably get knocked out. And that could come any round. So, yeah, I just love this fight as a whole. But I am probably going to be, you know, at least 60% on the Ramiz side, because as an underdog, he's one of my underdog picks that I do like to actually win. But what I like even more that is that if he wins, he's scoring well and probably on the optimal. If he wins, I think there's a very good chance he's on the optimal lineup. And that's what I'm chasing here. So go Ramiz. But yeah, very hard to trust, especially after, you know, seeing Max last week. It's not a lot different. He's not even as good of a wrestler as Max is. He's just very aggressive and good with submissions. So
submission after submission after submission. He's just spamming them. Right? He's spamming those submissions. Totally agree. This guy, and this is a very important thing that you just said. It's harder to predict. It's not that it's hard to predict who's going to win. It's hard to beat the probabilities that Vegas is giving us about who is likely to win. If this was easy, you know, these guys right now are sitting at minus 135 and plus 115, essentially 55 to 48%. Like, these probabilities are so close to par. Anyone can win this fight, and there's no way of really knowing. A lot of different things can happen. We've seen this fight play out. Max, Spike a little bit, Carlisle to a certain extent. A few other fights like this recently where you have these crazy grappler guys coming in off of the regional scene where they're able to execute that grappling and get submissions against low-level opponents. But once they step up to the UFC level, you're not able to overwhelm these fighters as easily. Like Austin Hubbard, you couldn't overwhelm him. He's seen it before. So he's not that easy to submit. And then these kind of submission guys, all of these fights are like late notice fights too. I don't know that Ramiz was told about this fight more than a week or two ago. So everything's late notice. So there's that risk also of where have you been training? How much training? That's been messing up everything. So it's more important to right now just identify, hey, this fight will score well for the winner. Load up on it. It's middling priced. Just have both sides. I'm actually picking Sato to win. I got a bet on Sato because of the Max thing. You know, because of that, I'm like, fuck these guys. And these crazy, they all look so sexy for DraftKings. Like, you watch the tape and you're like, five takedowns in one round. Oh my God, look, he's advancing position. But like, then they get to the UFC and it's like, oh wait, they were fighting scrubs. So it's hard to know. It's hard. You never know when these guys step up. And I did not see, Ramiz did not look good on his feet. Well, like when he was getting hit in some of these fights, he looked a little bit like, oh boy, if somebody was hitting him like really hard, he would not know what to do with himself. So I got a little sense of that. So I'm going with Sato, but mainly it's load up on this fight. All right, Juicy J, he's back. Julian Arosa, last minute replacement, taking on Sean Woodson. Woodson is a minus 440 favorite. He's not priced that high on DraftKings, 8,800. So he should be the cash chalk play, I think, of a pay up just because of his odds value. He could be. Woodson's superpowers, he's very big, but actually Arosa's pretty big also for the division. So, you know, 6 foot, 6 foot two. I don't think Woodson's going to have this great height advantage, but I bet even without looking, he's got a pretty good reach advantage. I'm going to pull that fight up here. So I'll start with you, Sean. Woodson versus Arosa.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Sean Woodson. I've never been high in Julian Arosa. I'm going to have a fuck ton of Sean Woodson. I think he gets the finish in this one. I think he gets it quick. We've seen Arosa be put down before. Fight is minus 175, doesn't go to decision. Unless Arosa catches him, like I just see Woodson dominating here. Smaller cage. I don't think Arosa is going to be able to do anything tricky or escape. I think if Woodson wants to go for the finish, he should get it. As long as he's in play too safe and cautious. I don't think he will. That's the risk here, is that he plays it safe and kind of coasts. I think Woodson's going to knock out Arosa. My favorite play on the board.
There it is. His favorite play. Maybe a later in the pod kill shot.
He's too chalky for a kill shot.
We have to wait and see.
He's going to be mega chalk.
Sean, good stuff. Now, Kyle.
Looks like Woodson has the 5-inch reach advantage. So not a ton of hike here, but a pretty big reach advantage.
Juicy yeah, J, I mean, was told about this fight like today. It was like yesterday.
Yeah, for sure. And was he even with the UFC before that? I feel like he had another region. No. Yeah, like it was
cut.
He had
this
a win.
His third stint in the UFC.
It was, oh shit, they're gonna let me back in? Sure, I'll take that fight. I may or may not be in shape. So yeah, it's hard to like Arosa here, and Woodson looked fucking great in his UFC debut. I just think he's gonna box Arosa up for as long as this fight lasts. Arosa will put up some volume himself. He's more experienced. I think he should look to get the fight to the ground. But he's just not great anywhere. And I don't know how he beats Woodson on the feet aside from, you know, like a head kick knockout or something like that. I think his only shot really is to get the fight to the ground and hope that he can submit Woodson, because I don't think he can just keep Woodson on the ground. And I don't know how much of a tank, you know, Arosa is going to have cardio-wise. So I just see Woodson just styling on him for three rounds and then putting him away, you know, sometime in the third with just too much volume overwhelming Arosa and maybe even get like a referee-type stoppage. I just don't think he has that like KO power in his hands where he's really going to test that super weak chin of Arosa, which is what we like to target against, but he definitely could. I mean, we've seen him get some nice flying knees. That could happen again too. But I like him to get the win. He's my favorite play on the card. Lock and cash. Not quite all in. I wouldn't be shocked, you know, if he just went out there and sparred and won 30-27 and didn't get 10x at 50%+ ownership. So not going to be all in, but definitely a core play.
Yeah, I'm definitely not all in on Woodson. I like what I saw on tape. He looks really good. Very smooth boxing. Very relaxed for a guy who's kind of new. Like the fight against Bochniak, he just looked like he was chilling out there. He was relaxed. He was like the uppercuts and, you know, no problem stopping the kind of mediocre attempts at takedowns. In fairness, though, Bochniak is like 5'7". Okay, he's really small. Yeah, 5'7", very small. Very, very. Basically, Bochniak doesn't belong in the 145-pound division in the UFC at this point. If you're 5'7", you have to be...
Thank you, sorry.
You have to be fighting at 135, okay? Let me tell you something. I'm 5'7". And if I was standing in front of fucking Sean Woodson, okay, I'd probably actually piss in my pants from fear.
I know I would.
100%. This is a giant man. So, like, what the fuck is Bochniak? These guys are too small. Move down. Weight class. It's not okay. Luis Pena is 5'10". He's fine at 135. So.
Not anymore.
I have to eliminate this fight and say, you know what? This was a giant man fighting a little teeny hobbit from the Shire. And I can say that because I'm 5'7", so I'm allowed to say about 5'7" people. I'm allowed to make fun of them, that they're hobbits from the Shire. But now he's fighting a guy that's the same size. That's all I'm saying. I'm like, give me a reason to play a fucking underdog. And I'm just looking for any reason because there's not that many underdogs on this card. And my reason is we haven't seen Woodson against a full-grown man. Now, the other thing is, Julian Arosa does have some wins via submission. Okay, he does have a rear naked choke. This guy, Sean Woodson, is a boxer. He's learning wrestling and he's learning the MMA stuff, but he comes from a boxing background. He does not have any sort of submission training or anything like that other than what he's done in recent times. So there is an outside path for Juicy J to like find his way to getting a miracle takedown, maybe hop on the back of this dude, maybe choke him out. Very young in his career, 7-0. If you look at his opponents, you know, these are not serious opponents. 0-3, 3-4, 3-4, you know, Shamrock FC. What the fuck is that? Shamrock FC. You're not, same guy. What the fuck is this, right? Same guy.
guy, Rashard Lovelace, only fights against Woodson.
Same guy.
So we don't really know how good this guy. All we know is that a 6'2" man, the only fight that he's had against a real fighter, 6'2", smashed up a 5'7" little tiny person.
I'm just looking for any. I just want an inch to squeeze into that thing to say maybe there's a shot here because there's only 10 fights and we've got to, you know. So I'm giving Juicy J a chance here. But of course, I'm picking Woodson for the win.
All right. Inside the distance. Fight doesn't go to decision minus 210, by the way. So
probably got to have a piece of this one. Let's go to another fight. Marlo, are you excited for this one?
Tanner Boser taking on Philippe Lienz.
Last time we saw Philippe Lienz, you know, he's disappointing against Andrei Arlovsky, just getting pointed up against that dude.
Yeah, I can't wait for this.
But it's Arlovsky.
Arlovsky does that, though. Yeah, everybody who's not very good who fights Arlovsky gets the Arlovsky treatment. You're like, oh, yeah, this is what it looks like when you go up against a good boxer, like who has technique. Oops. Now you've got Tanner Boser. Boser. He's a big fat dude. Beard. Wings bombs. Yeah, Sun Tzu says he was 5'7 when he was 11 years old. Yeah, Sun Tzu, he's a giant man. It's like me versus Sun Tzu. Like Woodson, the contrast with Woodson and Bochniak is like me walking with Sun Tzu to go see the fucking UFC card in Jersey or Brooklyn or wherever the fuck we went. It was like a giant and a hobbit just walking along. It was very, very.
I was with you guys. It was two hobbits because I'm what? I'm 5'8".
All right. I'm Boser. Why, Kyle, these are heavyweights. Why does it say minus 210 goes to decision? Neither guy has knockout power. What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I would say Lenz has knockout power, but Boser's probably tough enough to withstand it. And this is probably just going to be a low-paced heavyweight fight where Lenz is the guy with the higher ceiling, you know, more knockout power, but Boser's probably the better point fighter of the two. And if this goes to a decision, I think he has a better shot at getting his hand raised. But neither guy is going to score highly in the decision here. And I don't want to rely on either of them to get a knockout. So this is just a fade for me. This is a good time to go get a drink, go get some food, something. I think this is the worst fight on the card, to be honest with you. It could be close, but I just don't think it's going to be exciting at all. They are heavyweights. Maybe it does just take one shot. They'll both be fairly low owned. That could be your path to big money, but I'm probably X-ing these guys out of my player pool.
There's no X-ing. 10 fights.
I'm X-ing multiple people. I have to.
You're thinking of fucking X people.
I do, yeah. I'm going to have to.
This is a fight sniper. I don't have a fucking clue who's going to win it. I don't have a fucking clue.
Well, I don't think you need to. I think this hits back really well earlier. Lenz is the one who, if he wins, is much more likely to get a finish and put Boser away. Boser is, you know, regional guy. Boser's career is weird because he was in there against Daniel Spitz, who I think is terrible, and then Cyril Gagne, who I think is legit. So it's kind of weird. And against Spitz, by the way, who is not very good, he put up like 76 DraftKings points. No, thank you. Lenz, on the other hand, he won a few years ago. It was might have been even be last year. He won the what do you call it, the No, World Series fighting.
Just to be clear.
PFL.
Let me point this out here. As we're looking at the Tapology, and to your point,
look at this guy's career, like, of recent times. You know, decision, lost decision, decision win, decision win, decision win, decision
but
lost.
Pull up Lenz now. So Lenz won the PFL tournament in 2018, and his last four fights there were finishes. He finished everybody. In all of his PFL fights, he won by finish. It's worth noting, before that, he was in Bellator, and his two fights before rooting. That, he got finished. He actually, holy shit, I didn't even notice this. One, two, three, four, five, 7, 8, 11. Before his last fight against Arlovsky, 11 straight fights ended inside the distance.
So, I mean, Kyle, this do you want to reconsider your statement? This is a guy who's fought 11 times and it ended inside the distance.
Bosa is, is tough. Is,
I'm picking Bosa to win, so that's another reason it's paid for me.
Bosa only wins by decision.
I'm gonna go on the Lynn side. I think Lynn's a little better, quality of competition. Although Bosa was an ACB, which isn't bad at all. Like ACB is legit. So I just think Lynn's is more likely to score larger. So I'm gonna have more on the Lynn side. I'm also, you know, for heavyweight fight, it's weird to take an underweight approach, but I'm probably with Kyle. But I'm definitely not Xing it out, and I'm definitely gonna be. I might be a little over the field on Felipe Lins if everyone's just going to ignore this fight.
It's a tough fight, dude. It's a tough fight. Let's see. Who's younger? Bosa is younger. It's hard to believe. Bosa is younger. Based on the photographs,
it's kind of hard to believe. But Bosa is the younger fighter.
Lins, you know, been around. This is I don't have a lean.
I'm not making a pick. I will, though, not fade it. And I do think that Lins is the correct DraftKings FanDuel play because clearly this guy can finish fights. He's done it a lot, and he has guillotine. You know, this Copeland fight, though, this was five rounds. I mean, Copeland was just lasting, right? But he was getting his ass whipped. But, you know, beating Jared Rosholt, it's not a bad win. That's a real opponent.
It's old now, but that was a real opponent. How old is Jared Rosholt? Yeah, he's 30. He's not that old. So, like, that's a real opponent, a guy who has wins in the UFC. So, at the very least, you know, he's beaten somebody who I've heard of. Alex Nicholson, another guy. I've heard of him. Not a good fighter. Kind of sucks. But no, I'm not going to count that one.
My point is, at least he has finishes. So, for that reason, I'm going to lean Lins, but it's hard to pick a winner here. They both are just these big goofballs who throw fist and start to know who's going to win.
All right. Let's move on. No, not Mara Morella. She's out. Moving on.
Kamal Worthy. Luis Pena. Violent Bob Ross. The last time we saw Kamal Worthy, Kyle, he was ruining my shot at 50K. At the MMA live final, I was eating a fucking Buffalo Wild Wing. Really poor quality wings. Do not recommend.
Samesies. Okay?
Do not recommend.
I wonder what B-dubs you guys went to. I have a good B-dubs by me. But
no. Times Square. I have good B-dubs. Like, that is just fucking bullshit. Go support your local mom and pop wing place. No Buffalo Wild Wings.
But I'm sure their local mom and pop wing place isn't showing the pay-per-view fights, you know? So that's the issue.
They show the pay-per-view. You just got to know.
Okay.
Hooters wings aren't bad. Go to Hooters.
That's true.
Hooters is always good. Great wings.
And if you want to sponsor us, we'll say go to your place.
Hello, extra crispy sauce on the side. So I was enjoying a fucking chicken wing. Not enjoying it. I was
eating it. One.
I look up. I'm like, all right, here we go. I don't even need to watch. My guy is minus 1,000 favorite. Let's take my hundy, 100 points. Let's move on to the next fight. We're looking pretty good so far. And then my man Kamal Worthy comes out, does the same shit that dude did last week against Frank Camacho. Comes out, throws a big punch. Camacho, wobbly. The knee's getting all wobbly. I'm like, oh, wait, is this really happening right now? And then another one comes, and it's like, no, all right. Regain your set. Go for a takedown. Oh, shit. This guy doesn't have takedowns. Oh, shit. Sun Tzu's distracting me over there. Right? Oh, shit. This guy doesn't have takedowns. Next thing I know, he's knocked the fuck out. Just like Frank Camacho last week. Gets knocked out by some wrestler who had no striking whatsoever. Gets knocked the fuck out. So now you've got Luis and Violent Bob Ross Pena, and he's like, I'm going toe-to-toe with Kamal Worthy. Two men enter. One man leave. We're going to throw fist until somebody drops. There was an actual quote in social media from Violet Bob Ross. So, Kyle, is Kamal Worthy going to pull off another miracle here?
I mean, yeah, if Pena's going out there and trying to brawl it out to see who's going to be the better guy and who can go down first, I think Worthy's very live in that type of fight. I think that's a perfect type of fight for Worthy here. So that's exactly what he should hope for. Makes me like him a little bit more. And I already liked him a little bit more for DraftKings purposes anyways, because if Worthy wins, he's paying off his price tag. Whereas if Pena wins, I don't know that that's the case. It could definitely be a low scoring win from Pena. I think the edge for Pena here would be to go to the ground, at least mix it in. I think he'd be okay on the feet, but I think Worthy's probably the more powerful guy. Could be the one throwing more volume. I just think Pena's probably the slicker striker, more tools in his toolbox. And if he can mix in takedowns, he's live for a submission as well. So that's why he's the favorite here. It's not because he's going to be the better brawler of the two. So I'm picking Pena to get the win. But he's not a fade for me, but I want to be underweight to Pena, whereas I want to be overweight to Worthy simply for the fact that is if he wins, he's going to score well, and that's what I'm searching for. I'm just going to be mixing those type of guys in, hoping I can have the right combo.
I like it. Now, Sniper, here's what I noticed about Pena. We all love Violent Bob Ross from the Ultimate Fighter show. Very lovable character. Plus, he's Violent Bob Ross. That's just an awesome nickname, and it makes me like him more. But
you're a simple man, Kevin.
Wait, what's that? There's always a butt coming.
You're a simple man.
I like the name. Who doesn't like fucking Violent Bob Ross? It's fucking great. The fact that anybody knows who Bob Ross is great. But here's the thing. Who's he beating? Richie Smullen? That was the same dude who was having like anxiety, couldn't get in the ring. Steven Ocho Peterson? Who the fuck? Steven Peterson? This guy? Hold on. Let's look at his record in the UFC. Not very good. Lots of losses. Beat Martin Bravo. But Martin Bravo is the only guy worse than Ocho Peterson. Matt Wyman? I don't even know who that is. So this is not somebody who's good, right? So he's beaten scrubs, okay? He's taken losses. The Holy Roller, that's close. So I like him. But, like, let's not pretend that Luis Pena is, you know, the next contender right at 135, okay?
The thing is, though, is that you got Kama Worthy, who I don't think is, outside of Devontae Smith, hasn't really beaten anyone good either. And Devontae Smith was a training partner. Those fights always get screwy when training partners fight each other. Like, it's something weird always tends to happen. Anytime Kama Worthy's been in there with a name you would recognize, I'm not just cherry picking. If you just look for a name you recognize, Kyle Nelson lost round one knockout. Matt Bissett lost round two knockout. Billy Quarantillo lost round two knockout. Paul Felder, this is 2012. So now I'm just proving my point. It's the only name I recognize, Paul Felder, round one knockout.
Paul Felder got his start to his career knocking out Kama Worthy. That's pretty interesting.
It's been around a while. So it's just one of those, you know, he's a journeyman, and it's the same type of thing. I think, you know, Pena is going to be the more athletic guy, the bigger guy. He can mix in the takedowns. I think he's pretty safe for a win here. I don't think Kama Worthy is going to shock the world again. I like the odds in this fight. I will agree with Kyle. I'm a little worried about his ceiling. I think he makes for a fine cash game play. I think he's pretty safe. But I will have some Worthy in there, because if he wins, it's probably by knockout and he's on the optimal lineup. So I'm not fading Worthy, but I like Bob Ross in this one. I take your point. There's going to be spots to fade him. I don't think Kama Worthy's it. I think they're still protecting that character for now.
Very possible. How about you, Kyle? Any strong feelings on this fight?
I started it.
Oh. Yeah, he went.
Oh. Well, then I'll give you my opinion. You know what? I get distracted by the comment section here. So I'm like looking at things. All right. Just I've said my piece on this one. Ross, Bob Ross, Pena, if you look at his DraftKings performances, you know, they're very up and down. 53 points in a win, 49 in a loss, you know, 75. 117. He's all over the place. I'm wiping out the Smullen. That was a fast sub. But actually, technically, that could happen here.
I actually think Pena needs to use his takedowns here. I don't like the idea of watching Luis Pena stand there and wing bombs with Kama Worthy is what I'm saying. I think if he does that, he is absolutely live to get touched in the right little spot and go sleepy time. So we're talking about underdogs that have a shot. If Kama Worthy is winning this fight, he's going to go out. He's going to land a couple times in the right place on Luis Pena. He can knock him out. He can get 110 points in that win. I'm not saying it's super likely to happen. I think the odds are pretty well spot on here. But the question is, Luis Pena, how does he score well? Probably if he's doing takedowns and submission grappling. He has just great length to him. He's a really good submission fighter when he wants to be. Worthy does not seem to be someone who's got a lot of wrestling. Certainly doesn't use it in his fights. So I think that's the path to the victory for Pena. But, I mean, I do want to pay attention to the fact that Pena said, I want to go out there, stand in the middle of the ring, throw fist, and one of us will fall down. That's more 50-50 to me. If it goes down that way, that's kind of a 50-50 scenario. In that case, I'm going to favor Kama Worthy. Now, I don't believe that will happen because usually once you get hit in the face a couple times, you're like, fuck that, I'm going for the takedown. And then you say after, well, I was going to do that, but then he was piecing me up, so I switched up my game plan. But I'm giving Kama Worthy a shot here. I think he's got a chance as an underdog. And as far as Luis Pena goes, little worried about how well he can score compared to the whole area of fighters around him, which I like all of them, these heavy favorites. So I don't think I'm going to be – I'll probably be below the market on Pena as well. All right, let's move on to the next fight. It's a short card, guys. But before I move on, I want to mention this comment from Sun Tzu. Sun Tzu says he loves Boser. Said that Leans was juiced during his PFL run, allegedly. I don't know that for sure, so I'm saying allegedly. And he couldn't win in Bellator when he had his opportunity. Let's take a look at the actual statistics here. I just want to see for myself. And let's see what he did in Bellator. Lose, lose, lose. So there you go. Lots of losses in Bellator. Some wins in Bellator, but that's not the same thing. Bellator. 2014, 2016, 17. Then he goes to the PFL, gets juiced up, and starts winning fights. So wanted to just point that out there. All right. Here we go. Mo Green, Gian Vellante, heavyweight fight. Vellante moving up. Mo Green, I hear, and I don't know, it's a rumor that he gave up smoking cigarettes to train for this fight. It's just using the vape. It's alleged. I don't know for sure. But I think that would definitely be a positive for his gas tank. Green.
No shit.
You know, it's better if you're not smoking cigarettes. Like, you know.
It's crazy.
For your gas tank. And not drinking before the fight. That I don't have any knowledge of, though. Mo Green -230. This is a massive favorite, Kyle. What the fuck is going on here? You're gonna lay -230, Mr. Betting Expert, on Mo Green? You're laying -230 with you nuts?
I can't believe we got through a whole intro without because I know which way you're leaning, without you yelling about how much bigger Maurice Green is. Size is your thing, Kevin.
No.
You glossed over it.
No, because he smokes and drinks. I don't care about size. Smoking cigarettes. Fucking drinking. You're laying -230 on a guy who he's 33. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. If he's smoking and drinking before the fights at age 30 on The Ultimate Fighter, you think now he's not? I mean, Kyle, what the fuck is going on?
In quarantine, what else is there to do other than smoke and drink? So
let me tell you something. A lot of people I know who didn't smoke or drink before quarantine smoke and drink now.
So Mo's for sure back on the darts and the beers and all that good stuff.
You know it.
But no, I'm not laying over 2-1 on Mo Green. I mean, he's no good. But neither is Vellante. These guys are both kind of just scrubs, and Mo Green's the bigger guy fighting in his weight class, where Vellante just wasn't cutting it at light heavyweight, so he's moving up to a weaker division.
I think he's fighting bigger guys. I think Vellante.
But that's a guess, though.
No, but I mean, he's so bad.
What logic is that?
You're frozen, Sniper.
Sniper's sitting here sounding like Lil Jon.
But no, I just think this is, they're kind of the same guy. I mean, if you made Vellante the same size as Mo Green, probably a 50-50 fight, honestly. But I think the size advantage will come into play here, and I think that's really what I like the most about this fight is Green's size advantage. I think he could just keep Vellante on the outside, land a couple more jabs, land some more strikes, and get a decision win that way. But unless he gets a finish, I don't see him scoring highly, so I don't love him on DraftKings. And this fight could be really close on the feet. So, I don't know, man. I just don't like this fight very much. I'm not going to X either one of them out, but I'm going to make sure that they're like 10 to 20% in my optimizer. I'm not going to let the DS give me 50% of either one of these guys. But I am picking Green to win a unanimous decision here. So I'd say dog or pass on the betting line, but I don't know, on DraftKings. I kind of like Green more because I think he has a better shot of a KO.
Dude, I'm not on board with you on this one, okay?
You're wrong.
I don't care. I'm not on board. And I have my explanations. I have my reasonings that I gotta describe. Look, Sean froze after he said I'm wrong. What the fuck is up with your internet? All right. I'm not on board. Let me tell you why. First of all, Gian Vellante has wins against real UFC fighters. Okay? This is a guy who is, I mean, is he a gasser? Yes. Does he have, but he's got a couple things going for him. One, he's a very good wrestler. Can't take him down. No one can take this guy down. Like, he comes from a wrestling background. I remember the fight against Pat Cummins. He was whooping Pat Cummins up until he gassed, but he was whooping Pat Cummins up. Couldn't take him down. So this fight is going to play out on the feet. As a matter of fact, if Gian Vellante was smart, he'd go for a takedown, but he just won't because he's not smart. A fucking meathead. But
and Green's more dangerous on the ground as well.
Yeah, he's not that dangerous. I mean, you know, he could throw up a submission against like Junior Albini. Yeah, but I mean, like, he's not that dangerous.
He's not that dangerous, but Vellante's just not dangerous, so more dangerous.
I'm not scared of Mo Green on a guy. Like, if you're scared of Mo Green on the ground, you should not be in the UFC. Like, that is not a guy. So, like, look at this, okay? Just who has Mo Green beaten in the UFC? Junior Albini. Now, the fucking guy comes out in a diaper. This is nothing to be proud of. Jeff Hughes. This is not a UFC fighter, Jeff Hughes. Let's be real. Let me show you a picture of Jeff Hughes. That, does this look like a guy who's fighting in the UFC and getting wins? No. This is one of these guys who is beats people up at the bar, and then he goes out to like LFA or some bullshit thing like that, and he fights the fat guys, and he can get a win. That's what he is. He's not good. And that guy went to split decision with Mo Green.
You need to go into your boy's record now. You can't do this one-sided.
No, I'm going. Hey, listen, I'm not one.
Because it's pretty
drinking beers.
Go Gian Vellante.
I'm looking. All right, you ready for this? Gian Vellante. That's right. Little John. Little Snipe. Because of the interference with when he speaks. I call him Little Snipe. Gian Vellante, right? He's got a win against Eddie Herman. That's not a bad win. Eddie Herman. It's not a bad win.
He's 2-4 in his last six with two split decision wins over Ed Herman and Fred Barbosa.
He got a win over Corey Anderson. That's the best you're going to get.
Yeah, that's the best you're going to get. But look, since then, he's fallen off.
He's always been the same guy. He's always been this mediocre. Listen, losing to Sam Alvey, that was not a good look. No.
His win is that win against Saperbeg Safarov was fucking wild because Safarov's insane. Like, he's not that good. He's smaller. He's arguably more fight worn.
He's definitely more
fight-worn. And what's What's interesting to me is I think most people geek are on your side.
No.
I think I could get some leverage on Morgan's screen. Yeah.
Are they?
I think John Vellante is going to be, in terms of underdogs, he's going to be up there because people know Maurice Greene smokes and he's, you know, he's got the whole rep behind him. Like, I can get a little bit of leverage on Maurice Greene, who
he lost to the so milk much better. Sack, Sergey Pavlovich. One does not simply lose.
What?
Well, no,
are
no,
you,
no,
you're thinking
no.
of the wrong guy. You're
no, thinking yes. of the wrong Sergey guy. Would kill Vellante.
No, no, no. That's not the milk sack. Sorry. I was thinking of a different Sergey. It's a different Sergey.
Yeah.
Wait, I thought it was a milk sack. Yeah, no, this guy looks like legit. He's not a milk sack at all.
He's legit. He's fight against Sergey.
No, no, he's not the milk sack. There's a different Sergey that's a milk sack. I can't remember his name. There's no way I'm going to be able to pull up his picture. But if you saw him, you'd know what a milk sack
is. Are you thinking of Sergey Spivak?
Yeah, Spivak. Spivak.
Yeah.
Just to show you what a milk sack looks like. He didn't look like that. That's the milk sack right there.
Okay. So anyway.
That
changes everything. I thought he lost to Spivak. It was a different Sergey. Damn it.
So my Morgan isn't great. He's so much bigger. He's like, look, this is a GPP fight. I
can't listen to your distorted.
I'm a little higher.
Yeah, you roboted up.
Yeah, I can't understand a word you're saying.
I hate this
sounds
shit.
Like fucking Little John, like, you know, coming in with some distortion. It's cool, but say, I'm on a boat.
Hey, you sound like a mumble rapper.
All right. Anyway, listen, it's a fight with a high inside the distance prop.
Minus 215. Got to have exposure. I don't see Mo Green knocking out John Vellante.
Maybe he will, but I'm going to have
you need an underdog on this card. And I think John is the best underdog on the card. How about that?
I don't hate it.
I'm forced to choose one.
I don't agree with it, but I don't hate it.
All right. But I'm forced to choose. It's not my fault. This card is what it is. All right, let's move on. Sniper is just freezing up on me. It's making me crazy. Brandon Allen taking on Kyle Daukaus. Brandon Allen's coming in at minus 310 with the comeback on Daukaus at plus 255. Fight doesn't go to decision, minus 245. Kyle, is this one of those fights that you want to be all in on? Because I know you mentioned three.
No, it's not an all-in fight, but I do like this fight a decent amount. Both sides, I think Allen is the wrestler. He could go out there, get a first-round submission or a bunch of takedowns, advances, like he has been, scoring over 100 points in both of his UFC wins. But he's the most expensive guy on the slate, so we really need him to do that in this scenario, which I don't love. And Daukaus isn't bad. I think Daukaus is probably the better striker of the two. Less power. I mean, he doesn't really have much behind his strikes, but I do think he's the more, you know, better, you know, boxer of the two. And he's good on the ground himself, mostly with the choke game. I don't see him being able to take Allen down. So we need to be Allen getting the takedown and Daukaus getting a reversal or something like that, which Allen is not the greatest at holding people down or even keeping top control. So I could definitely see this being, you know, a grapple fest where they're both just getting reversals. And I think this would be exciting if this hits the ground. But I think on the feet, this could be a really sloppy fight. And if I knew this was going to stay standing for 15 minutes, it's for sure dog or pass, because I think he's Daukaus is the only one who could pay off his salary in that scenario. So I'll be on both guys here. I'm picking Allen to win, but I think that there's a little bit of value in the line on Daukaus at this point, over 3-1 on Allen. I think that's a little bit too high. And I'll probably be, you know, I don't know, about 30% or so on each guy, I would guess. I'm not sure. I'm kind of going to let the DS decide my exposures this week on most of the fighters. I'll X out a couple. I'll make sure a couple are core plays, and then I'll let the DS do its magic.
You're just letting Deezus take the wheel?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part. I'm guessing. Well, with 10 fights, I don't know what the hell my game plan is, but it's either – I think I'm probably just going to make one main lineup that I hand build, and I don't know who would be in that one. I feel like one lineup, I'd prefer Daukaus. But with mass multi-entry, I'm probably going to end up with more Allen because there are some underdogs that I'm cool sprinkling in, and that's going to leave me enough money to be able to get Allen. And if Allen wins, he can score high. So I could definitely see him making a decent amount of my lineups. But Daukaus could get a first-round sub himself, so I don't hate it at his price tag. Not an all-in fight, though. I like three others more, but it's right there, fourth or fifth favorite.
Sean, Brandon Allen's nickname, all-in. I feel like it's telling me something.
No. Oh. I mean, I'm going to have a lot of it, but it's like the most expensive card. Daukaus, by the way, comes from a BJJ camp. He's got plenty of sets himself. Like, what if he tries to play the sub game with Brendan Allen? I know Allen has let people up in the past, but what if Daukaus starts hunting for a sub and not, you know, does, you know, or is able to stop takedowns? There's paths for Allen not to score a ton of points. I don't think they're super likely. It is a good fight to target, and I am on the Allen side. I wrote my notes. Allen should just grapple fuck Daukaus. Like, he should be pretty safe to win. Daukaus is cheap, by the way. So if you want to take a couple shots there, I'm definitely on board. I think there's underdogs I like more. But yeah, Brendan Allen's the pick here. Pretty much agree with everything Marley just said. I might be a little bit further under because I am all in on the next two fights.
Well, there we go. So
you can only go all in so many places.
Yeah, all in on the next fight is pretty wild. But my thing here is, listen, I watched Daukaus on the regional. He looks great. Like, he looks really good. Definitely, just like the
situation with, what the hell's that guy's name?
Bramaj. Like, you watch him on the regionals, like, oh, this guy's going to be DraftKings gold. But you know who else looks like DraftKings gold on the regional scene? And when I say DraftKings gold, you know, I mean grappling advances, submission attempts, and all of that shit. And even more golden on FanDuel, quite honestly, than DraftKings. But, you know, Brandon Allen is that too. Submissions constantly. Grappling only wants to get it into the mat. Both of these guys want to take the fight to the mat, and neither one of them will hold position. They're both very aggressive. They'll lose position to submissions. They get reversals. So I do think there is a chance here for just massive amounts of just grappling to the point where we're going to be at the sort of mercy of fight metric and their scoring to figure out, was that an advance? Was that a takedown? Was that a reversal? What the fuck? How a submission attempt. Like, there could be so much of that we could wind up with a crazy, insanely high score. Or we could also wind up with one of those times where, like, oh, no, they didn't score shit. So we're a little bit at the mercy, I think, in this fight of fight metric, who they bet on, and how they score it, at least on the DraftKings side. I think FanDuel uses somebody else. I think those guys are only DraftKings, by the way. So, you know, to that end, I really like the fight. Both grapplers. It does appear to me that Daukaus is a better striker than what Allen is, but Allen, I think, will be able to force the issue where he wants. And the fact that he's got a win over Kevin Holland, we see how good Kevin Holland is. This guy submitted Kevin Holland. He's no joke. I think Brandon Allen is a better version of what Daukaus is on the mat. So I'm definitely picking Allen to win. But, you know, I think Daukaus is alive to, you know, catch a sub in there at some point. I don't think it's going to happen. I do think this is Brandon Allen's fight to win. But I'm not betting it. I think he's too big of a favorite to bet. But for DraftKings purposes, 9,200. Yeah, I'm going to try to squeeze him in there if I can. But he's just one of a bunch of high-priced, you know, I mean, Perry, Woodson. You know, there's a few up here that you're very happy to pay up for. So, like, you say the most expensive, but, like, you know, is Perry going to outscore him? Perry needs a knockout in the first round to outscore what Allen is going to do if Allen wins. Simple as that. If Perry goes three rounds, he's not winning. He's not outscoring him. Woodson needs a knockout in the first couple rounds to put up 100+. He's not going to get a takedown. He's not going to do any grappling. It's important to note. Poirier, we love him. We're all in on him. Fine. But, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Green, I don't trust him to get a knockout. I like Allen, and he's my favorite payout. Fuck Green. I'm going to scan Green's social media, find a picture of him smoking cigarettes like 2 weeks ago. I'll show it to you, and then you tell me you want to bet on that guy. He's like, I'm going to fucking crush this guy. Or maybe not. I don't know. It's all speculation. It's a legend.
All right. I messed with my order here. Next up. So I'm all in on this fight. Brandon Allen style. All in, baby. Love this fight. But not really. I'll just have a lot of exposure. And I'm going to get some Kyle Dawkins just in case he gets a miracle sub. But Allen is my play here. And my pick. All right. Here we go. People's main event. Mike Perry, minus 320 favorite, taking on Mickey Gall, plus 260 underdog. Fight doesn't go to decision, minus 275. The odds makers want to see a finish. Let me just break down the stylistic matchup before we throw it over to you, Sniper. We got Mickey Gall, a guy who's beaten the worst of the worst fighters in the UFC, and lost to some mediocre talent so far in his career. He is a grappler and BJJ specialist. Not the most athletic guy I've ever seen, but he's got a lot of size. He's a very big dude. You know, size matters in MMA. He is taking on Mike Perry, who's a psycho lunatic, but has wins against some very good fighters in the UFC, but has decided he doesn't want coaches, he doesn't want trainers, he just wants his girlfriend with him, and he's crazy, and he says he doesn't cut weight, he only weighs himself an hour before the weigh-ins. He's got some crazy shit that he's out there talking. So narratives galore about Mike Perry. I want to point out, beat Alex Oliveira, split decision win against Paul Felder, Jake Ellenberger, Hot Chocolate Roberts, decent wins. Split decision losses against really good fighters like Vincente Luque. Mickey Gall. His best win is Salim Tawahiri. And he didn't look that good in that one. So, Sniper. Mike Perry, Mickey Gall. What are we doing?
Look, this fight's really simple. I'm all in. Mike Perry should beat the face off of Mickey Gall. But if Mike Perry gets stupid, which, look at Mike Perry, he's very capable of getting stupid, and Gall gets this fight to the mat, Gall will submit him. Quick, fast, and in a hurry. I don't see how this fight gets out of the first round. Like, Mike Perry is going to try and knock the shit out of him, and Gall is either going to crumble, which is most likely, or he's going to keep shooting for his desperation takedowns, find one, and submit Perry. I'm all in. I'm going to have like 75-25 because Gall is one of the dogs that if he wins, breaks the slate. But yeah, all in. Perry should win unless he gets stupid, but it's very possible he gets stupid. Pretty simple.
I want to see if Perry has fear in his eyes. Not Perry. If Gall has fear in his eyes when he sees Perry staring at him, Kyle, because I would if I was Gall.
Mike Perry's the kind of guy, if you see him walk towards you, you cross the fucking street.
Yeah, you're like there's no, a story. Thanks. All right, wait, Mike Perry. I just saw Mike Perry was telling a story, and he's like, yeah, I was at this party, and some guy was giving out these little party hats. And, you know, he saw me talking to my girlfriend, and then he put a fucking party hat right on my girlfriend's head. You know what I did? Yes, I do know what you did, but why don't you tell me, Mike Perry, what you did?
Please tell us.
Well, suffice it to say, he was carried out in an ambulance 10 seconds later. Like, come on. I knew that. Like, that was obvious that was coming. Like, don't put a fucking New Year's Eve hat on Mike Perry's girlfriend's head when he's standing next to her, because they're going to take you out of the club in an ambulance. It's as simple as that.
Lesson learned.
Yeah, yeah. That guy never did that to anybody's girlfriend again. He was, as a matter of fact, after that, he was so scared. He didn't even he didn't even go to a club again. New Year's Eve, bad memory. He just stays home now. Plays cards. Solitaire. He doesn't have friends. Because he has no teeth and, you know, whatever. All right. Kyle, what the fuck's going on with this fight, man? Mickey Gall, you on it? You betting that shit?
Yeah, I think Gall would be the side to bet of the two. I don't know how you could trust Perry over 3-1 at this point. It's either Gall gets a submission or gets knocked out. So I like both sides of this fight. It's pretty much an all-in fight. I think Gall is very live, though, because if he can get this fight to the ground, I think he could get a submission really quick. Or even if he could just jump on Perry's back, he doesn't even need a takedown. If he can just grab his back, I think maybe he can get a rear naked choke that way.
Why do we think that Perry is so easy to submit?
I mean, he's just not the smartest guy, and then he's only going to have his girlfriend in the corner yelling, like, don't let him choke you. That's, like, the advice that he's going to be hearing out there.
What would a real coach say? Let him choke you?
No, the real coach would be like, turn to your left side, grab his arm, something like that, something useful to get out of a submission.
Fight the hands, arm over the body.
Something useful.
Don't let Cerrone belly down arm bar. Oh, your arm's broken.
But yeah, for the fight that Perry wants to have out there, he doesn't need any coaches for that. You don't need a coach for a street fight. That's what Mike Perry wants, is he wants to go out there and just have a brawl with Mickey Gall. And that's not what Mickey Gall is going to want to do at all. Mickey Gall is going to chain wrestle here. He might not be successful, but he's going to attempt to chain wrestle here. And I think if he wins, he's going to score 90-plus points. So I do like Gall here. And it's kind of like the Allen fight. Like, if I'm making one lineup, I'd rather have Gall in that lineup. But if I'm making 150, I'm going to end up with more Perry than I am Gall. And I do think Perry wins this fight more than he loses it. Most likely outcome is that Perry gets a knockout here. But I don't think it's 75-plus percent likely. So my play is going to be Gall. And I think he's going to submit Mike Perry in the first round.
I'm going to fall off of my chair. Disbelief.
Wait till the next fight.
Oh, my goodness. No, the next fight, you can't pick a crazy winner. But this one, Mickey Gall, my goodness. Man, do you think that if you didn't hear that he doesn't have a coach and, you know, he's training on his own, that you'd feel the same way, Kyle? Or is that narrative influencing you?
No, I think it's more, their salaries. If you put Mike Perry at 8,400 and Gall at 7,800, I'm not going to like Gall quite as much. I would rather have a lot more Perry at that point. But I think over 3-1 is just too high in that spot. Mike Perry's good at one thing, really. It's brawling. I mean, he can go out there. He's a better wrestler than Gall. He's not going to really do anything to Gall other than try and land some ground to pound if he did that. And he could end up getting caught in an armbar. I think he's more likely getting caught in an armbar than he is winning on the ground himself. I'm just targeting the ceiling from Gall if he gets the win here. I think he's going to be sort of popular here, but I still want to be overweight to the field. Like, I could see me being 60-40, something like that, in favor of Perry. But I think Gall's going to submit this dude.
Crazy. All right. I'm just going to say I don't think Gall's going to submit him. I think Perry's actually a sneakily good wrestler. I think he's got good grappling. I think he's got wins against good grapplers, real MMA fighters like Alex Oliveira, who's a real actual grappler. In the ring, and he's got a win against him. He's got a win against Jake Ellenberger, who's a wrestler. So this is a guy who can handle a takedown. He's got 70% takedown defense. He hasn't been in there against a chain wrestler type, but I never saw where Mickey Gall has such a gap. This isn't a Colby Covington over here. You know, I haven't seen him chain wrestle really to the point where, you know, he's like putting up a clinic of takedowns.
No, it's not going to be that at all. He's going to chain wrestle, and if he can get it, he's going to win. But if he doesn't get it, he's not going to make it out of the first round. It's just going to be like a turtle up, please don't really fuck up my face type of thing.
Yeah, it's going to be like, oh, yeah, it's don't hit me no more. He's going to say, Papa, don't hit me. Kick in the door, wave in the 4-4. All you heard was Papa, don't hit
please,
me no more.
Please, let's go to the main event. Please.
That's what's going to be.
So I don't like when we start rapping on the show. I get very uncomfortable when Kevin starts to rap.
The people want the hip hop. They do. They want the hip hop. So I like Perry here. I put a bet on Perry, and I rarely bet a minus 280 favorite, but I feel like I'm a winner since after the bet, it went to minus 320. So I am told that as long as I beat the closing line, that makes me a winner. even when I lose my money. I just like.
Yeah, it's all that matters as long as you got the best line.
No, I just want to be like, hey, I'm
closing. Winning, losing is irrelevant.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. So I just think Perry's a real man and Mickey Gall is a boy. And we're going to see a real man beat the shit out of a little boy. And that's what I think is going to happen here.
Jesus.
That's right. I'm fucking brutal today. We went. I'm keeping it real. It's like he's fucking Mickey Gall. He beat Mike Jackson and fucking CM Punk and Sage Northcutt. Like, get a real win, and then I can respect you. But this is a guy who went toe to toe with with Vicente Luque and looked like he could have won it. It was a close fight.
But he went toe to toe with these guys who are okay with standing with him, where Gall is not going to be okay standing with him.
Yeah, but Ellenberger was going for takedown. This guy, he's got decent takedown defense, 70%. I don't know. You're right. But I just don't think Gall is such a submission maven. I think Gall could take him down and he'll just get back up. Like, I don't think Gall is that good.
I think he'll make a mistake trying to get back up.
Yeah,
and end up getting caught in a submission.
It's plausible.
Gall's a good grappler. I think the second this fight hits the mat, Mike Perry's in all kinds of trouble unless he's so fresh he can just body slam Gall or just power straight up like how Derek Lewis gets up? Unless he can like do that shit.
No,
then I think he's got a problem.
Stands up. He's like, I don't.
You know this guy's not training any jiu-jitsu whatsoever.
I know.
He's hitting so pads, girl. That's and hitting the big bag. You know, he's not doing any takedown defense, nothing that he needs to be doing in this fight. It's just purely, I want to go out there and brawl with this guy. So that's what I'm going to look to do.
Yeah.
Not a smart move being his girlfriend.
It's going to be fun, though.
Like,
yeah, like he was just married like a couple months ago.
It makes me feel like if you're his girlfriend, at some point, you're going to get punched in the face. I actually saw some training video, and I was kidding just before, but where he's like, he's actually training with the girlfriend and he like hits her in the stomach. He's like, oh, and it looked
I think that's the ex-wife. Maybe is that an older video?
I saw some video and he's like just sparring with this woman and it looked like he was almost kidding around, but he gives her a little body blow and she's like, oh, and like it looked like she was in just horrible pain. And I was like, oh man, you know,
wouldn't shock me.
You don't want to be like his girlfriend and being like, hey, spar with me. And you're like, okay, you know, like,
it's no thanks.
A very hesitant, like, okay. And then he's like, you know, he wasn't even.
What's about to happen?
He wasn't. It was definitely not a full force blow, but like even a little tap from, you know, Mike Perry. No, you don't want that. But you could be right, Kyle. You know, I don't think of that. But yeah, he's definitely not training smart, right? He was annoyed by the smart training. That's why he left his camp. Said, I'm gonna do the shit myself. Those guys would have been like, hey, takedown defense. You're going up against a guy whose only path to the victory is taking you down and keep it standing. And, you know, nah, you don't need no coaches. He's just like, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to fuck.
Well, he also says it's bullshit. You can't hear your corner during a fight.
It's not like, about
you can't hear him anyway.
I'm more concerned. I don't care about a corner, man. I agree. I don't think that's that important. Who cares? But if you're not training for takedown defense or submission defense right now, like if you know you have a fight with Mickey Gall, you should get into, like, you should be going up against somebody who's going to try to take you down and get your takedown defense practice going. But we don't know who the hell he's training with. He could just be like training with his girlfriend and she doesn't have takedowns. I don't know what the fuck she does. I don't know what her wrestling pedigree is. What if she's a good takedown artist? And he's improving his takedown defense.
Oh shit, that changes things, Lynn.
You don't know.
We are out in left field. What if the girlfriend can wrestle?
You don't know.
That's fair. I don't know. You're right. You're right. I don't know. You're right.
I just want you to read what Sun Tzu has to say here, just so you guys.
Oh, I'm sure it's
so you guys are aware. Kevin is on point.
Yeah, I don't think fucking Mike Perry can pronounce judo, Joe.
Auburn's here only to hear me talk about an old man beating up on a young boy.
That's why he likes hockey.
All right, let's move on to the main event. And Sniper, I'm going to tell you, no matter which way you go in this, I'm not going to be shocked. I'm not going to be disturbed. Actually, now I am. I didn't know he was going to just disappear. That I wasn't expecting. Now, let's go to the main event. Here he comes. So nothing you could say here, Sniper, will shock or disturb me in this fight. Because in all seriousness, this is a great fight. A real, real main event. Dustin Poirier, one of my personal favorite fighters in the UFC, taking on Dan Hooker, the Hangman. Really hot fighter.
Knocking people out.
Knocking out Gilbert Burns, who everybody is now betting as a 2-1 underdog against Kamaru Usman.
I can't wait to be on the other side of that one.
Let me just give you guys a little bit of a fucking... Before we talk about this week, I'm going to give you a little preview of next week's main event. I had to join multiple betting sites because I'm maxing out my bets on Usman on all of these different... They're all like, oh, your max limit is $2,000. Oh, let me go to another site. That's how confident I am in Kamaru Usman at minus 190. Like, let me sell my stocks so that I have more money to bet on this because the 50% return is better than what I can get in the stock market. We'll talk about that next week. Don't follow that advice, people. Don't mortgage your house for bets. I have a lot of money. I can do what I want. All right. I can't.
Humble brag.
No, kinda. I can. I just, listen, don't fucking call me and say, hey, Kevin, you bet Usman. He lost now. I don't have a house. Like, don't put that on me. I don't care. Don't put that on me. Listen, main event.
Kevin's response, that sucks.
Yeah, dude, listen. You should fucking only bet what you can house. Afford to lose. Yeah, only bet what you can afford to lose.
Just see your reaction. Oh, that sucks.
Technically, I'd be like, oh, that's a shame. That's a real shame. All right. Poirier versus Hooker, Sniper.
Poirier.
Poirier, Hooker, Sniper. All right, let's look at the numbers here. Poirier, minus 230 favorite, whatever. Okay, Hooker, plus 190 underdog, whatever. Fight goes to decision. Fight doesn't go to decision, minus 290. Looking for a finish here. First thing I will say is this is an all-in fight. There's, on this card, 100% exposure. It's really just going to be a question for me of where to set the exposures. 50, 50, 60, 40, 70, 30. We'll have to talk that through. Both these guys are going to stand and bang. That's what it's going to be. So, Sniper, who lands the killer blow in this fight?
So, I have an interesting take on this one. I think I'm very much against the field because, you know, first of all, we got Dustin Poirier is minus 225 favorite, and the fight doesn't go to decision, minus 290. It's definitely a lunch money bet. But Hooker by decision plus 625. That's how I think this fight goes. I do not think that Dan Hooker is going to get drawn into this brawl from Dustin Poirier. I think he's the better technical kickboxer striker. The problem is Dustin Poirier has the path through the takedowns. It's a really, really close fight. Just the more times I play it out in my head, I just see Dan Hooker winning a close stand up fight. Like, think when Dan Hooker loses, he lost his recent loss to Edson Barbosa. Like, I think that was an issue, obviously, with the kicks, and he just got lit up. And Dan Hooker, by the way, is tough as all fuck in that fight. Like, you want to see a man take a beating and just keep coming till his body gave up? Go watch that one. He knocked out Gilbert Burns, a guy who throws big. Sometimes Dustin Poirier throws a little too big. Eddie Alvarez made him pay, even though he won that fight. Michael Johnson made him pay and knocked him out cold years ago. Like, if Hooker stays technical and Poirier gets a little too big, I don't doubt Hooker can knock him out. Like, he's been in there with Yair Rodriguez, these kicking type of guys. Poirier is more of a boxer. And I just, you know, the fight against Paul Felder obviously was really close. I rate Paul Felder really high. Obviously, I'm a fan of Poirier as well. I just, the more, it's one of the things that played out in my head, I just think Hooker is the more technical striker and can win three rounds and won't get dragged into a brawl. If this fight does get into a brawl, then you have to favor Poirier. Poirier can knock him out. I'm probably on a fight where, you know, it's a very small lean towards Dan Hooker. I'm not, you know, super confident, but it helps that we need underdogs. I'm probably going to play 60-ish% Dan Hooker, stack it up in cash. The first thing you're going to do. And quite honestly, this is a fight where you could play both sides in GPPs and those small GPPs. Like, these guys are going to throw. I think, you know, I said Hooker's going to be technical, but Poirier's going to press the action. Hooker has decent volume. Like, this is, if no underdogs win, Hooker scores 40 to 50 in a loss. That could, you know, do some damage in your small GPP. So
if this thing play goes both to sides, decision, yeah, I was going to say, if this thing goes to decision, yeah, win or lose, could see 50, 60 points for just in strikes alone for the loser.
So I like Dan Hooker. It's a really small lean. I'm all in. So I'll have plenty of, I might be a shade underweight to Poirier because he'll be popular, but it's not like I'm going to be way underweight where I won't have live lineups. So give me Dan Hooker to pull the upset. It's one of the, I think it's the only upset I'm picking straight out on the card.
There we go. I like it. I like it. How about you, Kyle? What's your take on this main event?
Yeah, all in. I think I'm probably going to be closer to like 65-35 on the Poirier side. I think he's a little bit better everywhere. I think five rounds favors Poirier. I think the small cage favors Poirier. And I mean, I don't know how Hooker's going to avoid, you know, getting into a brawl, especially with a small cage, because Poirier's going to force it. He's going to be pushing forward the entire fight and just throwing volume. So it's not going to be like an at-range type of striking match. I think that would favor Hooker if it was, but Poirier's a smart dude. He knows that, so he's not going to let that happen. I think the wrestling's probably going to cancel out. This is mostly going to be a striking fight. Either guy could get takedowns here, but it's hard to project, you know, who and when and what. But I think Hooker was slowing down in that Felder fight. And now on, you know, during quarantine, making the trip over to the U.S., I don't know how short of time. I think he could fade late again here against Poirier. And if he does that, I think Poirier is going to pick up the pace and just end up drowning him. So I like Poirier to win in the championship rounds here. Absolutely stacking in cash. Sun Tzu even likes this stack in cash, which all that means is that you could stack this fight in GPPs as well. So I like that move. But for that to work, you need Poirier to win.
No, you need Poirier to win, but it to go to decision.
Exactly. You need Poirier, or even, you know, fifth round, maybe late fourth round type of deal. But yeah, I think Hooker could put up 60 points on a loss here. And I think this is an absolutely the fight of the night. You know, I would say fight of the year candidate, but that's already locked up. So just going to be a great fight. Cannot wait for it. And Poirier is my second favorite player on the card.
Just to be clear, Joanna versus Weili Zhang, fight of the year?
Yeah, lock it in.
Okay. I just want to make sure. all right. So here's my one concern. And you guys broke it down really beautifully. And I like that everybody had a different side and angle. So I'm going to throw my one concern out there. We have seen situations where fighters who just lost the champion, they gain the belt, lose it, have sort of a motivational setback in their next fight afterwards, right? So Poirier finally hit the golden unicorn, got the championship belt, takes the loss to Khabib. Now he's coming back his first fight after. We saw what happened to Tyron Woodley recently in some of his fights. He just doesn't look motivated anymore. Now, he didn't look that motivated when he was the champion, in fairness to Tyron, but didn't look that great out there. We saw what happened with Max Holloway. And again, though, actually, this goes back to his fight against Poirier as well, but he just looked like he's kind of lost his care. That fire to win seems to have escaped him. So there is some risk with Hooker still hungry for the championship. And Poirier kind of like had the championship, lost it.
Interim belt.
Well, or whatever. right? He was the champ for a minute. He lost it.
I'm the champion now.
What's that?
But I am the champion now.
You're the champion.
I watched. The problem with working from home, I can listen to movies while I'm working. And I watched Captain Phillips today. I am the captain now. I've been saying that all day.
Don't even know what the fuck that movie is.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
No. No idea.
Really?
Went over my
head. Go watch that movie. Solid movie.
Captain Phelps? What?
Captain Phillips. Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks.
I know it exists, well, but it seemed like a
Somalian pirate movie.
Somali pirates.
It seemed like a boring movie. All right. I don't care about that. Watch Uncut Gems. That thing's nuts. All right.
What? So, I didn't like it, but that's for another show.
Yeah. Degenerate gambler like you doesn't like that shit. It hits a little too close to home. So. All right. Hold up. So.
To me.
That movie made me uncomfortable from the beginning till the end. But then afterwards, I was like, I felt something watching that movie, and that's why I liked it. All right. So. I'm just worried about the motivation for Poirier getting to the highest level, taking the loss, coming off the loss to Khabib. You know, what's my motivation now? How am I going to get up for this next fight? Whereas Hooker is still trying to get his way up there to get that shot against Khabib. So I think that's the only, because I think straight up, we all think Poirier is probably a little bit of a better fighter than Hooker. Like, he's rightfully the favorite. He's shown that he's just super well-rounded. His wins have been against the best of the best guys. He went through the gauntlet, Alvarez, Holloway, a win against Justin Gaethje, who is the number one guy right now. So, you know, this is not anything to like thumb your nose at. This guy is the elite of the elite in the UFC. But again, Hooker on the up and up, more motivated right now, still feels like, hey, I need this win to get my championship shot. I don't think Poirier is getting another shot at Khabib, no matter what, if he wins or not. So there's that one little piece of things that kind of say, all right, maybe it's Hooker's turn. Plus the fact that underdogs on these UFC main events win so much, so frequently, regardless of the odds. So for, you know, just for that reason, normally I'd be like, oh, Poirier, this is Poirier's fight. He's a better fighter. And I think he is. But these are the two guys just going to be throwing fists. And you can touch the one guy in the right place. He's going to go and start getting wobbly. I think it, for all intents and purposes, because of that, because of the style of the fight, because of the Rona, and we don't know who's training where or what, you know, it could be anybody's game. So, yes, am I picking Poirier? Do I expect Poirier to win? Do I think he's a better fighter? Yes. But I think on DraftKings, I'm probably going to be, because of the salary and the way the lineups look with Poirier compared. Like, if I play Poirier, I have to throw freaking Gian Vellante in there. That don't feel so good.
You love or, Gian.
Huh?
You I love like, Gian Vellante.
I like Gian Vellante, but technically I need Gian Vellante and Mickey Gall in there because you can't play these favorites without, like, two underdogs. So I don't like both of those guys to win. I don't like any two underdogs to win on this card. So, you know, in that sense, if I have Poirier in there and he wins, my lineup just looks so much better because my payups become, you know, Perry and whoever, you know, and whoever else we talked about up there, Woodson and all those other studs. So who's 9,200?
Brendan Allen.
Yeah, and Brendan Allen. So these other studs, right? So, you know, for that reason alone, we're going to have to get lots of Poirier exposure, lots of Hooker exposure. I like Poirier to win it if he's the usual guy that we see every time. But I have no doubt that it's possible he comes out a little bit flat, a little bit, hey, you know, I was on the top of the fucking world and now I'm not feeling as good about it. I'm a little less motivated. Maybe I'm going to move on in my career and become this sort of top five gatekeeper guy instead of being a, you know, I don't know if he's there yet, but I mean,
could be. He's been around for a long time and he's starting to get a little longer. Oh, still only 31. But in terms of fight years, this guy's getting a little long in the tooth here. So, I mean, he goes back to 2010 in UFC alone. It's a long time in the UFC. So, a little, maybe he's like that high-end version of Jim Miller. A top five gatekeeper going forward. I don't know. Or he makes another run. I don't know. We'll have to see. But my pick is Poirier, but definitely like Hooker.
a lot for DraftKings, FanDuel, Super Draft purposes all day. All right, let's finish it up, guys. The kill shot. Give me a play that you want to go a little bit heavier on, going to be a little different from the field, you're willing to stake your rep on. Kyle, I'll start with you.
Not too different from the field, but Gall, first round submission.
Oh, my God. All right. Could happen. Sniper. Actually, I'll give you my kill shot. I'm going with Gian Vellante to get this win by finish. Fucking guy. I hate that guy.
I was debating going the exact opposite of you. But
no, Mo Green for the.
No, oh. I thought about it, but I'm gonna stick on brand. I always take an underdog. I don't look for favorites. So Dan Hooker,
there it is, Dan Hooker for the kill shot, guys. All right, that wraps it up for this one. I will say this: last week I told you guys, my kill shot last week was actually that the winning Nuts lineup would leave a shit ton of money salary on the table. Looking back at last week, the winning lineup left 4,200 or 4,700 on the table, and the second Nuts left like 2K on the table. So leaving salary on the table last week proved to be the correct play. This week, I do not believe that leaving salary on the table will be a successful approach. Try to spend the full cap is what I will say. Don't try to rush after what happened last week. That was an unusual situation, and it was quite obvious before the card that was a strong possibility. Whereas this week, no. I mean, it could happen, but it doesn't appear likely to go that way. So I would definitely not be looking to leave lots of salary on the table. That will do it for the kill shot FTP DFS Army VIP breakdown. The Domination Station optimizer will be loaded probably tomorrow afternoon. Why? Because DraftKings only now, like an hour ago, finally, or a couple hours ago, finally added Arosa to the player pool. We got to get all the players in there, get all the numbers together. So probably get the Domination Station tomorrow afternoon at some point, start making lineups. We'll be around Slack, answering questions, talking shit, thinking about these fights. I always continue to research my fights all the way up through fight day. So it is very possible that on Saturday morning, I will be back with a little sort of mini 15-minute run through of the card once more, kind of see where we're at on Saturday, see where the lines have moved, and see if there's any other leans we can glean. I'm going all in on this one. Kyle, you going all in? I think I'm maxing out the big one here.
Hell no. No chance. Nope. Not on 10-fight card.
I want that 150K. I don't mind if I have to share.
I don't want to share with that many people.
I took down 150 last week. I don't mind sharing it with 115 other people.
Ugh. Nah, 50 max, I'd say.
Had to share it. How much exposure is too much, Sun Tzu asked. I think if you're going all in on the fight, then if you like Hooker to win, you're going 60% to 40. Like, you can't go 70% Hooker. To me, that's out of control.
I think Sun Tzu's talking about, like, with his winnings.
Oh, exposure to
after Hooker. After the card.
All right, so hold on. If you're going to get exposure
how
to
much
Hookers.
Exposure to Hookers is too much? Are you using protection?
Just be safe, Sun Tzu. Just be safe. Try to get a ring girl rather than something else. Yeah, use the fame. All right, that's going to do it for this one, guys. Good luck. Let's go out to the song. That's right. We can go out a little bit of this. Good luck this week. Helmets up.
Got the best coaches in the game. We really ain't playing. We regroup up in the Slack chat where the coaches debrief. We be piecing these puzzles, occupy the chunk of the pie. Ain't no lie when we hit the block. Helmets casket is hot. You be seeing helmet after helmet, helmet after helmet. First place, second place, fifth place, eighth place, 12th place, 15, 16, 20. So many helmets, you got blurred vision. We got.